Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We are live on NBC Sports Washington. Presented by EMP 180 Weight Loss. Structure. Accountability, results, the standard for weight loss in the area. It's EMP180weightloss.com. John Paul Flame joined by Jason Bishop, Johnny Cake Sawville, yep. Eric Bickle. That's the foursome. We'll talk Caps coming up at 7:20 with Chris Russell, our Washington Capitals insider. We'll preview game three. But joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline, as he does
JP.
Every Friday to talk movies, is Kevin McCarthy. And I'm told.
I'm too tired for that.
There aren't any.
Hey, JP.
Is this accurate? Are there no movies to talk about this weekend?
Deppy?
Yeah. Yeah, we're doing a summer movie preview. By the way, I got to let you guys know before I start the segment today that I am from the 757, and I want to make sure that is understandable.
Yes, we know.
Before I do my reviews today on,
well,
on your show.
You said it right this time, because last week you just said, I'm from 757.
It's Papa time. Let's get Rick, okay?
I'm from 757.
Yeah, oh my God. How do you like that Pusha T diss?
Wait, do I officially have a drop now?
I think you do, yes.
I'm from 757.
I've genuinely made it.
You have made it.
Honestly, that in
is
my
that
entire
first drop? No way.
No, we have other ones, but I'm
trying to remember. I mean, I know there's the Papa ones and all those things, but like genuinely, like I have, that makes my day that I have my own
JP.
Drop now.
JP.
Hey, JP.
Anything good? Is this movie Adrift good? Have you seen Adrift yet?
No. I was telling Matt that I was not able to see anything new this week because of my travel schedule.
You couldn't see Action Point?
Well, Drift sounds terrible. I can give you a 10-second plot synopsis if you want it. Shailene Woodley and her boyfriend go on a stupid sailboat, and they get caught like in a hurricane when they're sailing from like Tahiti
to San Diego.
Yeah.
But he
dies, and then she's out adrift on the boat.
Well,
does that
see,
sound
the,
like fun?
The intriguing part, no, but the intriguing part of that movie is it's a true story.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're having the real lady on the show today at 10:22 on Fox 5, and she's coming on because her name is Tammy, I believe. She wrote a book. We had Shailene Woodley and Sam Claflin on earlier in the week, and yeah, I definitely want to see it. Last night I saw a movie called Hereditary, which I'm going to review next week, which, Jason, we got a text after I get off the air here because I think
Kevin,
it's going to be a movie you're going to be excited for.
I've seen the trailers with that multiple times with my daughter, and she wants to see it, but it looks very freaky
Hold
and
on,
very
Hereditary
weird.
Film.
Cakes, let me tell you something right now, yeah. and this is not exaggeration. I got up this morning, and there's some scenes in that film that are so beyond brutally disturbing that I was running through my house to avoid any type of shadows and or like, when I went to the bathroom this morning, I was genuinely looking behind me in the corners of my ceilings because it was like that's how freaky the movie is. And we're going to I'll review it next week on your show. But it's Toni Collette. And the whole concept essentially is Toni Collette's character is a mom and her mother dies in her house. And there's some type of spiritual element that was left behind, but it's unlike anything you've seen before. It sounds like you've seen a spiritual movie a million times, like exorcism type elements, but this is completely different from that. And Gabriel Byrne's in it. It's Alex Wolff. It's unbelievably scary, and I cannot wait to talk about it with you guys next week. But this week I'm doing a summer movie preview, and I wanted to ask your opinion. And this is not a bit. And I was telling Matt this because I genuinely did not know who this guy was, but I got an invite to interview the cast of this movie called Uncle Drew, and I literally didn't know who Kyrie Irving was. So I was trying to figure out who that. So I'm looking at the list of people, and I grew up. Reggie Miller was somebody I knew growing up because I liked him on the Pacers. I'm not a huge basketball guy, but I remember Reggie Miller clearly. Yeah. And Nate Robinson and Chris Webber is on the list as well. But Kyrie Irving comes across, and I have no clue who he is. And I look him up. The guy has like the biggest social media following I've ever seen. Is he like that big of a deal? I have no clue. who he is. No clue.
He played alongside LeBron. He's won a couple of rings.
He'll be in the NBA Hall of Fame. How about
that? Won one ring.
Silly.
Great point.
But him and I are the same height, which I'm excited about. I figured like he was going to be massive, but he's only 6'3".
Think about what a failure you are.
He's slightly better in life than you. Slightly.
It's time to get Papa Squeeze.
So you guys want to get Rick? So you didn't get to see Action Point? I'm actually intrigued by that.
No, dude, I'm telling you. And Jason, I always update you on my schedule every week. I mean, next week, Jason, I'm literally flying to Dallas for this movie called Tagged to interview John Hamm and Jeremy Renner and Jake Johnson. Then I go to L.A. for The Incredibles, and I go to Hawaii for Jurassic World 2. But I saw Hereditary last night, which I mentioned.
The big red flag on Action Point is that none of the critics saw it, and that's always a bad sign. Like, if you're not going to show it to the critics, you know your movie stinks.
Right.
It sounds like it opened up cold. I don't know specifically on that particular movie, but Adrift was the only one that screened that I know of this week, but I had a prior commitment, so I saw Hereditary last night.
So let's get to the summer movie preview, because you like attention dollars so much that even when you don't have a movie to review, you're coming on the show.
Well, the movie for me for the summer will be Sicario 2, and that comes out June 29th, I believe.
Yeah.
Jason, I am so excited about that. I rewatched Sicario 1 last night, and Josh Brolin, obviously, he's probably having the best year out of any actor right now. I mean, the guy was in Avengers Infinity War, he's Thanos, he was Deadpool 2, he was Cable, and now he's in Sicario 2. But I'm excited about the Benicio del Toro continuation. I mean, I think we all remember, Jason, you specifically, the ending of the first Sicario when he just murders that guy's family right in front of him while he's
eating. That's a great scene at the dinner table.
Sit down at the table.
Amazing scene.
Unbelievable. I love that
scene. I mean, seriously, to think about that scene for a second, I remember talking to, I think it was Del Toro at the junket for that, about how different that scene was. I don't think he initially, in the script, from what I remember, kills the wife and the kids. I think he just shoots the guy. Uh-huh. But I think the whole concept of his character was that his wife and kid were killed. So the fact that he shoots them in front of him and he says, finish your meal. I mean, that is like the most brutal thing I've seen in the movies in a long time. So I don't know where the Sicario
Emily Blunt. Emily Blunt's not in Sicario 2, correct?
Yeah, and that's the thing I'm a little concerned about, Jason, is the fact that, one, this filmmaker didn't return. So Denis Villeneuve, who did the first Sicario, he did Prisoners and Blade Runner 2049 and Enemy and Arrival, he did not return for this, and neither did Emily Blunt, I don't know if she has a cameo or she has a surprise moment, but remember, she did A Quiet Place earlier this year with her husband, John Krasinski, so I don't know if that conflicted. But yeah, I think that the Sicario 2 is going to be a big deal for sure, and Jason, I'll text you after I see it. I see it next Wednesday, I believe.
Okay.
All right, so get to your summer movie preview.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I understand there's nothing happening in sports right now, so you guys really, really needed a movie segment today. So I figured that we would jump down the loop here with the summer movie previews, and I think Ocean's 8 is definitely one that everyone's excited about, especially Eric. I know Eric has his tickets. He's super excited about this one. This is the female-led Ocean's film, the spinoff of the classic films we all know with Brad Pitt and Matt Damon and George Clooney. This opens up next Friday. This is Sandra Bullock. She's Danny Ocean's sister, so she's George Clooney's sister in the particular film and has a huge cast. Blanchett, Mindy Kaling, Rihanna, Awkwafina, Sarah Paulson, Anne Hathaway. So that's
Rihanna?
Gary Ross.
You mean Rihanna?
Yeah, it's Rihanna. Who's Awkwafina?
No, it is Rihanna. Actually, it's genuinely Rihanna. I'm not kidding.
Is it really? It's not Rihanna.
No, it's Rihanna. So
everybody in the world pronounces it Rihanna.
I know, everyone pronounces it wrong. It's like, it's basically, she describes it as aunt versus aunt. So, like, some people say aunt, some people say aunt, so technically Rihanna and Rihanna are both
aunt.
Right.
So she pronounces it Rihanna.
Correct. Her family pronounces it Rihanna.
All right, I'll go with that. We got to change it.
Who is Awkwafina? Yeah. You throw out Awkwafina next to Rihanna and Sandra Bullock, like people know who she is.
Her name's Nora.
I didn't know who Awkwafina was either. So when the movie trailer hit for this movie, this is like, it was a big deal, and you know, it's all female led. And so who is this Awkwafina person? She's a musician. I can't say the name of her song on the air, but Eric, you got to listen to this song. Go to YouTube after we hang up here and just type in Awkwafina, and then the song is called My, and then the second word starts with a V. You'll see what I mean when you listen to it.
I thought her name was spelled the same way as the water. No chance.
Me too. It's definitely A-W-K. I definitely wanted to do a wacky Dasani bit when I walked in there, but I definitely
water.
Didn't.
Water.
pull it off with a Fiji and Dasani and Deer Park. I should have done a whole water bit with her. No, but yeah, the movie opens up on June 8th. And by the way, are Eric's eyes open right now? Or is he sleeping?
No, but I'm trying to ponder if this may be your most boring segment ever.
Listen, Eric, I already knew I was bombing about 3 or 4 minutes ago. Yeah, so, I mean, like this segment went way downhill from the minute I told you guys.
He's also not even doing the summer movie preview.
I thought you were
going
to do the preview.
You've done one movie. What are the other movies to talk about?
All right, next up is Incredibles 2. So I know, Cakes, are you excited about Disney Pixar Incredibles 2?
Not really. My kids are kind of aging out of the Incredibles at this point.
Do you guys not watch them yourself? I mean, the Pixar movies to me are always, I feel like they combine that idea of adult
not at
and
all.
Kids.
The answer is no.
No, we don't want
to. Right. Move on to the next one.
All right, that's
we'll
done.
We'll skip that one. Yep. All right, skip that one. Next up is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. I don't know if you guys are excited about this.
I will go see that. I'm all about CGI dinosaurs.
I don't know about you, Cakes, but like Jurassic Park from 93, the Spielberg movie, in my opinion, looks better than the 2015 Jurassic World because it was a combination of CG and camera practical effects. So I think they went too CG on the last one. So hopefully this one's a little scaled back. But as the trailers are showing us, it's just a bunch of CGI T-Rexes and Raptors. So I don't know how it's going to play out, but the director of this movie. Did you guys ever see a movie called The Impossible about the tidal wave that takes out that family when they're on vacation? Mm. Did you guys ever see that with Tom Holland?
No.
Okay. Phenomenal movie.
On a true story too?
Based on a true story, yeah. There's a family on vacation. A massive tidal wave hits an island or the beach area, and they all get separated. And Tom Holland's in that. He's the new Spider-Man. Phenomenal film. If you haven't seen it, Naomi Watts is in it as well. And that comes out. So that guy directed Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, which is why I think a lot of people were excited about it. His name is J.A. Bayano. So. And then next up is Ant-Man and the Wasp. Eric, please don't cut me off. Ant-Man and the Wasp, which is the new Marvel Studios film. Paul Rudd, Evangeline Lilly, Michael Douglas. This looks awesome. I love the first Ant-Man. I don't know if you guys were fans of that one. Cakes, did you like Ant-Man? Or
I
no?
did. I kind of liked Ant-Man.
Dude, Ant-Man was... Yeah, I know. Guys, this is very hard for me because I'm on radio right now and I know I'm bombing and I just know that you guys are ready to get me off the air. So
let me finish. All right, go ahead, Ant-Man, whatever.
Ant-Man opens July 6th and then finally Mission Impossible. Mission Impossible Fallout, which is the new Christopher McQuarrie film. Ethan Hunt's back. And did you guys know that Tom Cruise broke his ankle while shooting the movie? You know the scene's still in. You know the scene's still in the film, right?
Right. He did it a second time, though, right? It came back 6 months later. I thought they reshot the scene.
No, he jumped off that building, broke his ankle, knew it was broken, and then decided to continue with the shot, get up, and run and out the scene so that way they didn't have to do it again. He did come back and finish the movie, but that particular scene was not reshot that I know of.
Oh, I thought he did.
No, dude, Eric, after he hit the building with his ankle, he looked down, he knew his ankle was broken, and he got up and ran off. I know. You guys want me to review the new Kanye album before I go?
No! Certainly not.
We got to run. Kevin McCarthy. Coming up next, we will talk Stanley Cup Final with Chris Russell, our Capitals insider.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. Chucky's on 106.7 The Fan. We're live on NBC Sports Washington. Reminder, if you're not going to the game tomorrow night, Game 3, Stanley Cup Final, you can join EB and Cakes. They're going to be partying at the Brig in Southeast D.C. for a Game 3 watch party starting at 7 p.m. Rock the Red, cheer on the Capitals in pursuit of the championship. It's presented by Sam Adams. Details online now at thefandc.com/events. So that's the Brig. Do you know what part of Southeast D.C. it's in? Do we have an address?
I do have an address.
It's near the Navy Yard, isn't it?
It's right near Navy Yard, yeah.
The Brig.
Yes. Google it.
All right, joining us right now on the Mattress Warehouse Hotline is Chris Russell, our Washington Capitals insider for 106.7 The Fan. You must be in heaven because on your show, oftentimes you complain that there's not enough hockey talk in D.C. Well, it's been nothing but hockey talk, really, the last couple of weeks.
This is awesome.
You got to be loving it.
I heard CK got a complaint that we were talking
too much
hockey, which was music to my ears. Yes, I'm very happy about this. I'm very happy to paint the town red. I flew back from Vegas, I guess it was 3:30 yesterday afternoon, Eastern time, 12:30-ish Vegas time. There were a couple of Capitals fans going with me from Vegas to Seattle, back through Seattle to D.C., dressed in Capitals garb. Of course, there were thousands of, I guess 1,000 to 2,000-ish Capitals fans make the journey on their way to, and through Vegas for games one and two, either or maybe both. There were plenty of Capitals fans. So, yeah, I mean, it's awesome to see how far this team and this franchise and this city has come, and I can't wait to see what Chinatown is like tomorrow night.
By the way, what a terrible flight to have to go from Vegas to Seattle.
It must have been like an eight-hour flight.
Oh, that must have been. Was there a layover, too, in Seattle?
I barely made it, Jason.
Oh, really?
I mean, literally, I got off because we were a little bit late. It was already a tight connection. The rooster barely.
Because the rooster's not a small guy.
No.
So to travel from
Vegas.
He's got
to move through that airport, too.
To Seattle. I mean, that must have been awful.
In fairness, you haven't seen the rooster in a couple of weeks, so we are trimming down.
Oh, that's good.
Very good.
Right. Yeah. So the rooster is running now. Instead of an 8.240, I might be running like a 6.540.
Oh, okay.
I bet against that.
Yeah.
I'm betting against that.
I'm just saying that's a even for a skinny dude, it's a terrible commute.
It was a very tight connection. Let's put it this way: I didn't even have time to take Drabby a picture of the Seattle Seahawks stupid 12 club like I did on Sunday.
Hey, I'm unaware of this. Where did the station set you up in Vegas?
Yeah, what were the accommodations, Rooster?
I stayed at the Tropicana. On Vegas Boulevard.
At least I've heard
Vegas
of it.
Boulevard, yes.
I don't think it's silly.
Why is Bobby slapping his knee over
there? It's a poo.
It's such poo.
I mean, listen, Grant and Danny were at the Aria.
Yeah,
right?
They stayed at the Aria and you stayed at the Trop?
And I stayed at the Tropicana, which, listen, I'm not going to complain.
Hey, I saw some of the pool shots. It looked nice. I'm going
to
defend it.
Yeah, you could walk over to the Hooters and get your wings.
You're telling me that they couldn't put you at Aria? There's about 4,000 rooms in that building.
I did not go over to Hooters. I did have wings because it's one of the only things I can eat on this stupid diet that I'm on.
I wanted to know, going into this series, who did you think was going to win this series?
If I'm being perfectly honest, I thought the Vegas Golden Knights were going to win in seven.
Okay.
Which is what I also thought about Tampa Bay. I thought Tampa would beat the Caps in a tight seven-game series. So I was wrong.
Right.
I thought the Caps, would beat the Penguins in six. So it turned out to be right. You're going to be right. You're going to be wrong. I thought Vegas would ultimately, with home ice advantage, their speed transition, be just slightly the better team. So far through two, I could turn out to be right. I hope I'm wrong.
Your opinion hasn't changed?
No. And with Kuznetsov's injury, and we don't know how long lasting that's going to be, I have a feeling that's not going to be a short-term thing, but I hope I'm wrong on that. We'll have to see how that exposes the Capitals down the middle of the ice as well.
I initially thought wrist, but Jason said he is hearing it might be a shoulder, maybe like a dislocated shoulder or something like that. What are you hearing?
Well, so they were extremely, as always, tight-lipped after the game. And, of course, Trotz wouldn't even say anything on the teleconference that I was not able to hear. I read the transcript. So they weren't even saying that after the game, and I'm being honest with you, so I haven't heard anything in terms of exact medical diagnosis, but he grabbed immediately his wrist and lower left arm. They weren't whispering anything specific to point of area of injury on Wednesday night when we were in the locker room and even off the record. The bottom line is it's of course, as we know, somewhere in that area, right. Which I know doesn't help us in that regard. They just said upper body, either way, whether it's shoulder, wrist, arm, whatever it might be. I thought it was a dirty hit, I can tell you that much. Because of how it happened. If you look at the video, McNabb goes in, right, with his back and his, I guess, his butt, into Kuznetsov. But if you look, even though it's not the principal point of contact, the way the hit happens, look at the way the contact happens to Kuznetsov's neck and head, and the way it jolts through his body. He's not going to get suspended because, again, the injury did not happen to his head and his neck. But if you look at the way and slow down the video, his head and his neck snaps back. And this is the problem with the NHL is the injury did not happen to his head and his neck, yet the contact clearly goes through his head and his neck. And Barry Trotz was very unhappy after the game, and rightfully so, and called it a high hit. He didn't call it a dirty hit. He called it a high hit. And that's what he was talking about. Not necessarily that his wrist or his shoulder or whatever it is, ultimately, that was broken, hurt, whatever. He's calling it a high hit, meaning to his neck, to his head, to his face. That's what he was upset about.
I think it's just a vicious, nasty, gritty, physical series. I mean, both teams want it badly.
I agree with that.
I mean, but, believe me, I think the Knights could argue about a bunch of hits from us, too.
Sure, sure. But I mean, I'll extend one further. I mean, the slash at the end of the game on Brooks Orpik, who played a whale of a game besides the game-winning goal, that was assessed a game misconduct in a five-minute major that nobody knew about, including the Rooster, because I was so excited that the Caps won and on my way to the locker room. That was again, that nobody really even knew about. That was a dirty hit because it was a two-handed chop to Brooks Orpik that required stitches. Now, he's going to be fine at the final gun on Wednesday night. Nobody even knew about that. That's as dirty as they come.
By the way,
nothing's going to happen out of that.
When Orpik was penalized, I don't know what the actual call was. I don't know if it was a high stick early on Neil.
Right,
Neil hit himself?
Yes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So Orpik didn't touch him.
Right, because Orpik goes into the corner and he kind of like hits him with his body.
I never saw the hit.
No, yeah, right. Orpik hit him, but the force of his hit forced Neil.
Right, Neil hits himself.
It's essentially a clean hit.
Yeah, it's a clean hit. Yeah,
yeah, the body whip, if you will. From Orpik. Orpik never hit him to the head.
They showed the replay 10 times. I never saw it.
Right. And I've been watching hockey for 35 years. I've never heard of the quote on a minor penalty, illegal check to the head.
Yeah. Crazy.
And you look at the slow. Now, granted, we have the benefit of a slowed down replay. I've never heard of on a minor penalty, the term illegal check to the head, by the way, which immediately I was like, wait a second. I've never heard of that on a minor penalty, on a two-minute minor. Never heard of that.
Rooster, what was your vantage point for the Braden Holtby save? I mean, everybody in the arena, I thought it went past him. I couldn't believe that he was actually able to make that save. Where were you? Were you able to actually see it, you know, better than anybody else? I mean, where were you when that happened?
Well, of course, we're high top, but that's the side we're on.
Okay.
So, and I'm right next to John Walton, Ken Sabourin, and the broadcast crew. They're on our level, actually, for this series at T-Mobile Arena. It's kind of a weird setup there, because there's so much media. So we actually had a really good view, and it's the best save I've ever seen in person in my life. And I've been to a ton of hockey games. It's just everything you could imagine and then some. And usually I'm like a dollar late on everything. I have terrible vision and all that stuff. And I need replay to see. I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, my jaw just literally dropped about six floors to ice level. It was remarkable. It was everything and then some. I was like literally blown away, and I think I tweeted "Holy Mother of Mercy" in all capital letters on Twitter because I was like, I didn't know what else to say. If I didn't curse, I didn't know what else to say. It was the best save I've ever seen in my life. Period. In person, and I said that like with some time and perspective on the postgame show that I did. I said, am I just overreacting because it was just a big moment? And it was Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Final. It was the Capitals for. And I said this to Ben Raby, who does the network post-game show, And he goes, no. I mean, this was the best save either one of us had ever seen when we watched a ton of hockey. This was the best save either one of us had ever seen in person ever, period.
Yeah, everyone's saying that.
Yeah. What are you expecting for Game 3? I got to tell you, I was very, very encouraged by Game 2's performance. And I've gotten to the point now where I kind of believe if the Caps could stay out of the box, I like them in this series a lot more than I did going in. I picked them to win, but it was just kind of like, well, they beat the Penguins. They're going to do this. But it was more hope than anything. I actually think if they can stay out of the box, I actually think they're a little bit better.
Can't be giving them 5-on-3s.
No, you can't do that.
Because they allowed, what, 8 shots on goal during that 5-on-3? And worse, the two guys that took the penalty, Eller and Wilson. And the Wilson penalty I had especially a big problem with because that was a bad, bad penalty. In the
it was Oshie,
zone.
Wasn't it? I thought it was Oshie.
Well, Oshie had taken the one that led to the Theodore power play goal that made it 3-2. That was not a good penalty either, but it was Wilson and Eller that took the two penalties that made up the 5-on-3.
Okay. Right.
Those two guys are two of your best penalty killers, especially with Backstrom not really killing the typical amount of penalties that he normally kills. So it's not only taking penalties, it's two of your best penalty killers taking penalties, which has been a problem for the Caps in these playoffs. So you can't have the penalties, number one, and you can't have the two guys who took them taking them. Because Braden Holtby's not going to be able to belly out like he did. So, yes, you can't take those. You can't ask him to do that. You can't ask him to turn around the side the shots that you did. Here's one thing that I would say, guys. As bad as they were in that area, they went 10 and a half minutes right after that, 10 and a half minutes until about the 2 minute and 40 second mark of the third period without allowing a shot on
goal. It's incredible.
The Capitals have had stretches like this. Game 5, third period against Pittsburgh in the second round. Game 1, third period after allowing a second goal against Tampa Bay, of having huge long stretches, critical stretches, without allowing a shot on goal where – again, where they don't allow a shot on goal, and it's because they forecheck their asses off, and it's because they get aggressive, and it's because they push the tempo.
And they block shots.
Yes. Oh, and this was earlier. This was earlier. How about Ovechkin at the point?
Yeah.
Blocking a shot and from his knees, clearing the puck. From
incredible.
His knees at the end of a minute shift.
You know what, Chris?
When was the last time Ovechkin did that?
You know what amazes me? And we've talked about this before. And we had Beagle on every week during the regular season. And he was a part of that. Mm-hmm. These guys, and it just shows you the commitment and the drive to win, the will to win. These guys slide down on the ice, and they know it's going to hurt. And they take like a Max Scherzer fastball right to the gut or to the shoulder, to the hand.
Or to the head.
I mean, and they know it's going to hurt like hell. And they do it anyway. And they get up, and they skate around. They make a play, and then they limp over to the bench.
Oh, yeah.
And then they come out and do it again.
They're the toughest guys in the world.
They're unbelievable.
I mean, I can't say enough for the sacrifice these guys put. And it's not always blocked. Shots. It's how these guys work on faceoffs. Speaking about Beagle, watch the final faceoff. How hard Beagle wins that final faceoff of the game on Wednesday night. Just the work that goes into what he did on that final faceoff, and watch the work that if you go back and if you're a Caps fan, you want to watch the work he puts in on that 5-on-3. Rotating in first him, then coming off for a brief period, then coming back. I mean, it's just the stuff of, you know, everything you want as a sports fan of your guys sacrificing and putting their bodies on the line.
So many guys that are so valuable on that team. And I know isn't Beagle a free agent at the end of the
year? Yeah, he is.
I mean,
I don't know what
it's going to cost to get Beagle. He's earning himself some money, obviously, but I would love to have him back, man. He's
Beagle,
valuable.
Beagle, Carlson, Michael Kempney. I mean, they got some guys that they're going to have to pay or lose. But, hey, here's the thing I would just quickly say. Let's worry about that in a week and a half or 2 weeks or whatever. Let's enjoy this and hope for the best and hope that Kuznetsov can come back. We'll know a little bit more at about 10:15, 10:20, somewhere in that range when I'm over at Kettler Iceplex. We'll see if he's on the ice. Here's how I would answer this. I wouldn't expect him for Game 3, but you hope for the best, and we'll see what happens. Either way, Saturday night and Monday night at Capital One Arena is going to be off the chains.
Oh, I bet.
So we can assume, did he say that we can assume that Ovi and Backe will be on the same line?
Yeah, I mean, assuming that Kuznetsov is
right.
out, or you know,
right.
Ovechkin, and they're going to have to, if Kuznetsov is not in the lineup, I would guess, this is just a guess, that a guy like Travis Boyd probably would get the call because they kind of moved up their centers with Backstrom moving up with Ovechkin and Wilson, Lars Eller going back up to the second line, Jay Beagle, of course, moving up. And you kind of need that fourth line center, and Travis Boyd is really good at faceoffs. So I would expect him to be the fourth center, you know, just kind of moving everybody up. He's pretty good at faceoffs. So I would expect if Kuznetsov is out of the lineup, that would probably be the natural guy to replace him.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Russell. Appreciate
it,
buddy.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right.
Chris Russell, Capitals Insider, joined us on the Match Royale
Hotline. I wish you were playing tonight.
I know. Can't wait for it to get here. Tomorrow, it'll be here.
All right, you're an experienced HVAC technician, plumber, or pest control technician looking to join an industry leader? Crop Metcalf is looking for the best to join their five-star team. Crop Metcalf technicians enjoy excellent benefits, competitive wages, and a consistent year-round work schedule. Ready to jumpstart your HVAC, plumbing, or pest control career? Call 1-800-GO-CROP or visit CropMetcalf.com and submit your resume today. Crop Metcalf, home of the five-star technician and proud partner of the Washington Nationals.
You know, we talked about it right at the top of the show, but I'm still amazed at what happened in the final minute of last night's NBA Finals. If you're just tuning in, maybe you didn't stay up to watch the game.
Mm-hmm.
It was a late one. They don't have the whole Golden Knights production, but there's still the buildup, and it starts, I don't know, 9:15 or 9:20 by the time they tip off. And it was an amazing performance by LeBron James. But the final minute of regulation of last night's NBA Finals, LeBron has an amazing and one where he's mugged, scores, hits a free throw. That puts Cleveland up by 2 points.
Okay.
Then Kevin Durant gets the ball at the top of the key, plays a little iso ball, drives the ball to the basket. LeBron slides over. He was guarding Draymond
Clearly
Green.
Above the restrictive circle.
Yes. He slides over, and it appears that he takes a charge. Now, if you watch the video, the referee at half court looks like he was about to call a block. The referees get together, and apparently there's a rule which is almost never used, where if the referees believe the person taking the charge is in that restricted area, they can go to the video to see if his foot's on the line. LeBron's foot wasn't even close to the line.
Not even close.
They used it as an excuse, and they changed the call.
I'd like to see how many times in the regular season that they actually went to video to look at that particular play.
Well, Tyronn Lue said it was the first time in the history of the league.
Kevin Durant said that that's not the case. Steve Kerr said that that's not the
Eric
case.
Now, Eric and I disagree on it. I think it's a clear charge. He thinks it's a 50-50. At worst, it's a 50-50. And I would say this.
I think he was moving and he was turned a little bit.
And at full speed. Now, we've had the luxury of seeing it in replay and slow-mo. At full speed, I think it clearly looks like a charge. But go ahead.
So
that's just my opinion.
So now Durant gets two free throws. He converts. Tie game again. Now, here's the thing. If they didn't reverse it, it doesn't mean that Cleveland wins the game because then they're up by two with 35 seconds left.
Right.
They could still lose the game. But that's a huge change from going up two with the ball to now a tie game.
And by the way, LeBron, after the game in the presser, said he read that play from a defensive standpoint as well as he's ever read a play in his career.
Yeah,
that's how sure he was.
He was frustrated
that he was planted and drew the charge.
Lou may be fine because he said that they got robbed. You know, that's kind of what Cleveland's motto was after the game.
You didn't criticize the refs. You just said we got robbed.
So anyway, Cleveland gets the ball back. LeBron scores immediately. Very quickly scores, goes right to the basket, gets a layup. Now Golden State is trailing by two. Steph then gets the ball and goes to the basket very quickly. Scores, gets hit on the head by Kevin Love, makes the free throw because
dumb foul.
He doesn't miss free throws. Cleveland gets the ball back. Cleveland now down one, gives the ball to LeBron. It looks like they're just going to go for the last shot. He sees George Hill on a backdoor, makes a pass.
By the way, very low percentage pass. That was a stupid pass, I think, from
LeBron.
Thanks
for being on, George.
Could have been an easy turnover.
Well, if George Hill catches it, if he's not hooked by Klay Thompson.
I mean, he threw that ball so hard.
He probably scores a layup. I actually think he scores a layup
if he catches it clean.
George Hill goes to the free throw line. They're down one. Hits the first one. Then there's, I don't know if there's a timeout. There seems to be some time. You know, there's substitutions, that sort of thing.
Shorts the second.
He is short on the second. J.R. Smith, with 4.7 seconds left, catches the rebound right underneath the basket. 9 times out of 10, you see that in an NBA game, that guy goes
straight
up
back
for
up. Put back.
A layup or dunk.
Yeah.
Because Kevin Durant had kind of been pushed out.
And by the way, it's an easy layup for him if he puts it back up.
Instead, he dribbles the ball out
the half court
because he thinks they're up. And even though in the presser afterwards, he said, well, I knew what the score was. If we were up, I just would have held on to the ball and they would have fouled me. His own coach in the press conference said that he wasn't keeping track of the score. He thought we were up one.
All right, can we hear J.R. Smith say that?
Sure.
Because I haven't heard from him yet.
Well, I have Lou queued up first.
All right, let's hear Lou, and then I want to hear J.R.
Who knows if J.R. would have made the layup anyway, you know, so it was tough. You know, he had like a little – he could have had a little floater. Somebody was there. Then, you know, you're thinking about calling a timeout, but then Braun was open for a second, and then it just happened too fast. So, I mean, you know, we came into the huddle. You know, we had a chance to win. We had to regroup and, you know, try to win it. But they came out and played well in overtime.
All right, it's protecting his player.
That's not the part where he says he thought that we were up by one.
Yeah, but he did say that. All
right, and the lip readers of the world, they have
like the
video.
Well, he said he lost track of the score.
Yeah.
He did say that, didn't he? Thought I heard that.
Well, Lou admitted, like you said, Lou said he thought we were up one.
Smith said it to LeBron. LeBron was there incredulous right after the game. He read his lips.
Let me hear JR.
Tie ball game. We had a timeout, and I was trying to get enough space because I obviously can't stand it right there. Trying to get enough space to bring it out to get it, maybe get a shot off. And then I seen, I looked over at Bron. He looked like he was trying to call a timeout, so I just stopped. And then the game was over. No, I seen it. I knew we were tied. It's just I thought we was gonna call a timeout because I got the rebound.
He's
I'm
trying to show
sure
the coach under the bus.
I think I was gonna shoot over Katie right there. So.
On the replay, it looked like you said to LeBron, "I thought we were ahead."
If I thought we were ahead, then I would have just held on to the ball, let him foul me. But clearly, that wasn't the case.
Lies.
Not
lies,
the first
lies,
time
lies.
It's happened with J.R. Smith. I retweeted one where, during a regular season game, I'm assuming he walked off the court when he was supposed to be on the court, and the Bucks inbounded it to the guy he was supposed to be guarding as he walked to the bench.
I remember that play, yeah.
They played 5-on-4 because J.R. Smith turned his back and walked to the bench.
I bet you it's simple as I bet you he has like ADHD.
He's just clueless.
He just can't focus.
But can you imagine how frustrated LeBron is to have to play with guys like that?
That must drive him nuts.
You want to hear LeBron get Rick and leave the press conference?
Yeah, real quick, let me just say, to follow up on what you said, is that LeBron poured everything he had into that game.
Mm-hmm.
51 points. Shot 60% from the field, 8 rebounds, 8 assists, set up the potential game-winning free throw, and then he has to deal with that. That was their opportunity to steal game one. And the Warriors, I watched some of the presser afterwards, even Steve Kerr, they seemed casual about game one. They called it a feeling out game.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, no big deal. But they were about to just get a game stolen from them, which would have made it a series. And instead, LeBron has to deal with that bozo.
Cakes. I don't know if Adam Silver was there, but if he was in the building, he should have sprinted down to the court to tell those guys not to overturn that call.
Right.
Because if he wants to make this series interesting, he's got to have Cleveland
have
win
the
that
Cavs
game.
Upset them in game one.
Yeah, I mean,
Draw it out.
He wants it to go 5, 6, or 7, they obviously have to win that game. All right, let's hear from LeBron in the presser.
What's your version?
What do you mean, what's my version?
Well, did he think that the game was tied, or did he think that you guys had it salted away?
How do I know that?
Or did you discuss it at all with him at the end of the play?
No. They asked me if I talked to JR about it. I said no already. I knew it was a tie game. We was down one. George Hill went up. He made the first one. We got the offensive rebound. You know, I thought we were all aware of what was going on. That's my view. So I don't know what JR was thinking. I don't know the question that you're trying to ask.
I was just trying to see if you knew exactly what his state of mind was. Did he think that you guys had it won, or did he think he was trying to make a play?
No.
Not sure.
He just told you that.
What do you mean, I'm not sure? No, I don't know his state of mind.
Mm. Did you know if he knew the score?
No, no, That was Mark Schwartz, right?
Yeah,
he followed up. He followed up with some dumb questions, but you know, obviously,
I don't
LeBron's
blame him.
Off.
He's doing the best he can there. It's just
LeBron doesn't want to throw his teammate under the bus. But when he says, "I thought we were all aware of the score," and when he breaks it down, we were down one.
Right,
we hit a free throw.
By the way, what if
he's almost mocking J.R. Smith there? Well, that's
we
the
know
subtext.
How Michael Jordan treated some of his teammates. Yeah. What would Jordan have done to J.R. Smith if he did that in a spot like that?
Oh, he would have called him mother effer about 100 times, yeah. I would guess. Know.
But LeBron, man.
LeBron was waving his arms around like, are you kidding me?
Right.
I mean, he got a good performance from Kevin Love. He scores 51. They're right there, and it slips away. It's a Golden State who...
How many times has LeBron scored 51 or 50-plus in a game and lost?
That happens. A lot of times guys go off like that.
No, I'm just talking about LeBron.
Yeah, I don't know.
Usually when LeBron scores 50, I'm guessing he wins.
I wanted to do this story about the woman who's getting her vagina made from tilapia. Did you hear about that?
Oh.
Can we even
just
do that
made
story?
Out of a trash fish?
Yes.
Oh, gross.
She's born without a cilly, and they're making one out of a tilapia.
They don't have some other sort of ingredient.
They're using tilapia fish skin.
Really?
Yes. Maybe ask Feinstein about it. Let's put it out there on the Twitter. So
he loves Twitter. He loves Twitter.
He does.
He loves Twitter. Charlie
loves
Twitter.
ADs.
Those guys like Twitter more than cake.
Best-selling author John Feinstein joins us next here on The Junkies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.